being at an AA meeting or an Al-Anon meeting, I'm just, it's a place where I really feel at home, you know, where you really just can take a deep breath. And I'm here because I'm not unique, just because I'm typical. I just love alcoholics. I have a radar system toward them, I think, and I can spot them a mile away. If my husband said if I like them, they're doomed to have the problem, you know. And I come from an alcoholic home. My father had a drinking problem. He owned a bar in Cleveland, and I learned all those things that children learn when you come from an alcoholic home. My mother was very helpful in teaching me things to be mature and grown up, you know. She would teach me things like when we're out in the yard and she didn't want to talk to the neighbors because she was always afraid of people, she would just sort of pull me over into the shrubs and we'd pretend that we weren't there. And I thought that's the way mature people handle things. We had a lot of secrets in our house, you know. And I remember always being on guard. You know, you don't tell this person that. Don't tell this person the other thing. So I lived in this constant front, you know, not to let anybody know anything that's going on. God forbid I should say the wrong word. But when I got to Al-Anon, I had a lot of reasons. Dear. Yes.
Would you talk
into this one? Yeah. I had a lot of reasons for better. For blame. Blame was one of my favorite things. First of all, I come from a very Polish Catholic family. It's very different than an Irish Catholic. Polish Catholic is not a lot of fun, you know, and it's real grim. And my parents were very old world. I was born in Cleveland, and that was another one of my problems. If you came from Cleveland, you'd have my problems, too. And then I had the Catholic schools that I went to. And, you know, in Catholic schools, in one of the high schools that I went to, you had to take a test, and I didn't pass the test. But my father, trying to be loving and helpful, he paid somebody off to get me into the school. A little bribery goes a long way in the Catholic Church. And anyway, they got me in this school, and I knew that everybody there knew that I didn't belong. I knew when I walked down those halls, every one of those nuns looked at me and knew I didn't belong there. And, you know, I identify with the alcoholic in a lot of the feelings of being separate, apart from, different, and alone, because that's how I always felt. I really did. And so I blamed those nuns on lots of things. And I blamed my father and the drinking. And nobody escapes an alcoholic home. I mean, if you have children and you think they don't know what's going on, then you're as much into denial about your alcoholism as everything else. Because I knew there was a problem. I did not know it was alcoholism, but I knew there was a problem. And as a child, I already started protecting my father and blaming my mother. You know, if only my mother would get off his back and being such a nag, then my father would be terrific. You know, everything would be fine. And that's the way it went. We started learning a lot of peculiar things. And my way of dealing with that was, everybody has an escape route. Mine was I got into ballet classes. My mother put me into ballet school, and that became my escape. And I don't know if anybody saw the movie or the play A Chorus Line, but there's a song in there that says, everything is beautiful at the ballet. And that was my life as a child. When I was at ballet class, I didn't have to worry about what was going on at home. I didn't have to get involved in the fights. And when I was at my ballet class, I didn't have to talk to anybody. I started building up the walls. And everything was fine in ballet. And my mother kept thinking it was a phase I was going to grow out of, you know. And the more I was home, I hear the fights and everything, and I knew I couldn't stay there. And when I was about 18, I knew I had to get out of that house. My parents had a particularly vicious fight one night. And they got lots of yelling and screaming. And I remember I picked up my father. He was a short guy, and I was really angry. And I picked him up and threw him against the wall. And he fell down to the floor, and I felt very guilty about that. That's not the way a Polish Catholic girl is taught to treat her parents, you know. Not at all. And I looked at my father, and I watched him try to get up, and he was so drunk he couldn't. And I felt guilty about that for a long time. And I made a vow to myself that night. And, you know, it's one of those times, you know, a moment of time that's so clear in your memory. I can remember where I was standing, what I was wearing. It's just absolutely crystal clear. And I remember standing in my mother's dining room, and I swore, number one, that I had to get out of that house. And number two, that I would never go out with anybody who drank or marry anybody who drank. Great promises. And I hated alcohol, and I hated what it had done to my family. And now the only way a Polish Catholic girl gets out of Cleveland, it's not easy, let me tell you. My mother had a nice Polish Catholic boy all picked out for me. But again, my dance became my escape route, and I said I was going to go to New York. And I packed up my bags, and my parents gave me $50. And I thought when I was leaving all my problems behind. And I moved to New York, and I was terrified and excited at the same time, because I knew my problems were behind me. And sometimes I would get so afraid, because when I left, you know who you take with you, yourself. You know, there was this scared Polish girl inside of me. And when I would get terrified, I would call my mother, and she would give me a rundown on what was going down at home. You know, how many cars my father had smashed and getting him out of jail. And I knew I couldn't go back to that. I knew I had to stick it out. And I got a job in a show dancing. And the second day of rehearsal, in walked this tall, charming Irishman. And they didn't make anything like him in Cleveland, I'll tell you. He was gorgeous. And he had all the potential of what I thought would be a terrific husband. He was very witty. He was very bright. He was the life of the party. He was good looking. He was talented. And he was a little interested in me, which I couldn't believe. And you know what? He drank a little. And I don't know what happened to the vow that I made to myself, but I just knew that life with me would be so wonderful, and I would love him so much, and the alcohol, the drinking would just disappear, you know? I really believe that. And so we got together, and alcoholism was not a problem. He drank, but we were in the theater, and everybody drank, you know? But he was the life of the party, and I could just hide behind and ride on his coattails, and I looked good. Later on in the drinking, I wasn't too happy that people knew I belonged to him, you know? But then I was really pleased, because I could hide behind this charming guy. And so we began our little dance of death, really. And, you know, there's a wonderful Al-Anon who explains alcoholism, because, as I said, it was not a problem. We were in the theater. It was exciting. We were in New York. We were hanging around terrific people. We were doing lots of crazy things, and it was wonderful. It was beyond my dreams of this little girl from Cleveland ever had. And drinking was not a problem. You know, I drank. I really did. Later on, when, you know, Sean got ill into his drinking, and I got bored with it, to tell you the truth, he always says, "What happened to my 10 martini, what the hell, girl?" You know? I just got bored with it and put it down one day. I know. But we came out to California. We were in a show, and we stayed out here, out in California. And it was really a geographic. I didn't know that's what it was at the time. But we got married in California, and I thought, well, great. Now it's time to settle down. We've sowed our wild oats. We were young and crazy and kids. And now it's time to become mature, responsible adults. And what happened is he settled down. I settled down, but he didn't. That's what happened. And suddenly, I noticed his drinking. And there is an Al-Anon who explains alcoholism, because she said, you know, if alcoholism had knocked on my door on April 15th, 1969, I would have known exactly what the problem was. But that's not the way it happened, and that's not the way it happened for me anyway. Things start changing. You know, alcoholism creeps through the cracks of the windows and underneath the doors, and my marriage and things change. And I couldn't put my finger on what it was, you know. And I started, from that point until Sean got to Alcoholics Anonymous, doing everything I knew to get him to stop drinking and to make him happy. And none of those things work, because I'm powerless over both of them. But for me, my insanity, I didn't have a hard time with the second step, because you know, I started believing the alcoholic, and I think when we Al-Anon start doing that, we know we're in big trouble, you know. I started believing the lies he was telling me, you know. He told me if he only owned his own, being Irish the way he is, if he only owned a piece of the soil, he wouldn't have to drink. Now, I look back now, and it's true insanity, but I believed it hook, line, and sinker. And so we bought this awful house up in the Hollywood Hills. Sean said he never hid his drinking. He just hid the house in which he drank in, and that's true. It was on a trail. It wasn't even a street. It was on a trail up in the Hollywood Hills. It was surrounded by redwood trees. It was dark and damp. It looked adorable on the outside. The inside, it had no foundation. The plumbing fell apart. It was termite-ridden. It was becoming what our marriage was becoming. And that's where we were. We became the two of us. And alcoholism, as I said, it starts taking its toll in the strangest ways. I didn't make any friends. My only friends were Sean's drinking buddies that he would pick up and bring home. Because I started getting terrified, you know. I don't know when it was for me that I stopped making phone calls because I became too terrified to make a phone call. I got Sean. I could manipulate him to make my phone calls for me. I don't know when I stopped answering the door. I would just go to work and come home. And, you know, Sean is not the kind of drunk that got arrested, that went to hospitals, that went to jails. He came home every day. He went to work every day, and he came home every day, and he sat every night and got drank to oblivion. And it was just quiet insanity is what it was. And every day I kept thinking something would be different. So we got this awful house in the hills, and that didn't work. So then he told me if he only owned a Mercedes, he would be fine. So we got this Mercedes. And Sean likes old cars, classic cars, you know. He likes to collect them. And he kept saying this was a classic Mercedes. It wasn't a classic. It was just a plain old Mercedes, you know. Some nights we didn't eat, but we owned a Mercedes, you know. You know, when you live with alcoholism, somebody has to work, you know, to bring in the money. Now, I had only been trained to dance all my life. That had been my great obsession. And suddenly we had no money, and it never occurred to me that he should go to work. That never crossed my mind. I don't know why, but so I couldn't do anything, so I faked my way as a secretary. You get pretty desperate when you're living with alcoholism. And I went on these job interviews, and you know, if they gave me the test, they didn't hire me. But if they didn't give me a test, these poor souls hired me because I could talk a good talk. I could dress good enough and fake my way. And as I said, some poor people did hire me as a secretary. I couldn't, you know, they said you take shorthand, you type, and I said, yes, I do all of those things, you know. I would take my shorthand book and bring it home because I couldn't figure out my scribble, and Sean would pour himself a big glass of wine, and we'd go over my stenographer's notebook, and he would rewrite the letters. He did a much better job than my boss. And I would go in the next day and attempt to type it. When I didn't know how to file something, I simply threw it away. See, when you're living with an alcoholic, you're very busy up here. You're very busy. I was on the phone. You know, it's easy to spot an Al-Anon in the workforce now. It really is. Number one, we got a real bad attitude, and it permeates the whole department. And I was always on the phone, you know, and I thought it was to help me to spell things and things like that, you know. But what I was really doing, when I could really admit it, was I was checking up on him. What was he doing? I wasn't there to get absolute control. I wasn't there to find out if he was getting drunk. How drunk was he getting? What kind of trouble was he getting us into now? So I was on the phone all the time and not doing my work a lot. You know, my mind was at home. And an employee like that doesn't last too long, you know. They would call me into the office and they would say, you know, Bonnie, this is just not working out. You know, we're going to have to let you go. And I would do something that I just felt very ashamed of, not the way I was raised to be a lady and have some dignity. I begged and pleaded that I keep that job and burst into tears and did a whole number. And every time I did that, I lost a little more of my self-worth, a little more of my dignity. I humiliated myself a little more. And I would go home and I would tell Sean what happened. And he would pull out the LA Times, the job section, and look under other ads for me to go interview on. And that went on and on. I lost count on how many jobs I had. I can look back now and laugh at it, but at the time it was very desperate. And I felt I really owed a lot of employers amends, you know. And that's what it was like. I must have had about 20 jobs doing that sort of thing. And our world just started getting smaller and smaller. You know, when I told my mother I was going to marry Sean, she took me aside. She wasn't too thrilled because it was Irish, number one. But she took me aside and she said, you know, he's nothing but a drunk and a con artist. I later found out she was right, you know. And because she said that, I, of course, had to defend Sean, and I had to stop talking to her, you know. When the drinking was really bad, I would call his mother, and I thought she must be able to do something with him, and I would tell her about all the drinking and insanity that was going on, and she couldn't do anything, so I had to cut her out of our lives. I had no friends, and I didn't have a higher power because I had my religion and God mixed up, and I thought if I cannot practice my religion, I do not have a God. And what happened to us, it just became sicker and smaller world. It just became the two of us in this house, in the hills, with the drinking. I had no friend. I did have one friend, and she was more miserable than I was, you know. And we would get together, and we would both be suicidal after our visit, you know. And that was our life, you know. It wasn't real exciting. It was just the insanity and the devastation and the despair of alcoholism. And it's that thing of every day, you know, my husband had all these schemes. I still react to schemes, and everything's going to be okay tomorrow when I hear that. My stomach still churns, you know, because I believed everything was going to be okay. I believed it. I had to believe it was going to be okay. I wanted him to fix it. And I was getting angrier and angrier. And, you know, when I packed up my bag from Cleveland, I took all those problems with me, you know. When I got to Al-Anon, it was real easy to blame him for anything, for everything that was going on. You know, as my sponsor says, anybody looks good next to a drunk. And that was true. I looked great next to him when he was loaded. You know, I was the responsible one. I had three jobs. I took care of the plumbing, the washing, the cutting the ground. I did it all, you know. And that's what our world was like. It got more desperate and more desperate. And we had a really awful fight one night. And I don't know if any Al-Anons identify with this, but when you're up all night after these hateful, awful things have been said, and I never could understand how he could just go to sleep. You know, how did I do it? Never occurred to me he passed out. Never occurred to me, you know. And I was up all night, really distressed, and he got up the next morning, and everything was fine. And that's when I got frightened. Because, you see, unto this point, I really thought it was something I was doing wrong. I thought I wasn't a good enough wife. I didn't love him enough. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't a good enough cook. If somehow I were different, he wouldn't have to drink. And I made that my responsibility. I made his drinking my problem. And his drinking is not my problem. It's my reaction to his drinking. And that's what I found out later in the program. But after we had that fight that night, I knew that it was something more than just me. I knew that this was, it really frightened me because I knew this was just something I could not change because I realized he had no idea of what had happened the night before. And I just started getting more bitter, more angry, more closed in. I was one of those Al-Anons that are smug, self-righteous, and dominating. Anyway, and that's what it went. He said he asked me after that next day if I thought he was an alcoholic, and I said, of course not. You know. See, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I thought an alcoholic had to get up and have a drink every morning, or lived on Skid Row. My husband got dressed every morning in his three-piece suit and went to work. He never made any money, but he went to work every day. I don't know how that happened. You know. But, so he couldn't possibly be a drunk. You know. He couldn't. And that's what our life was like. Day in and day out. Crazier and crazier. And I knew I was the crazy one. He told me. He used to do little helpful things to me. To help me. And what I realize now, it always kept me on the edge. I always thought I was a little, you know, a little crazy. You know, he would do things like, when I would get dressed, he'd say, oh, you're wearing that dress tonight. And then immediately think, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong with this? Or he would say, gee, I liked your hair up. Or you shouldn't have said that to the hostess. I think you upset her. All the time, making me the crazy one. And you know, as I bought it. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I really did. I went out of town one week, And Sean called me. I was down in Orange County saving some people that didn't need to be saved. I did that a lot. I could just look at you and know you needed my help. You didn't even have to tell me what your problem was. I knew it, you know. Anyway, I went down to help my in-laws. And Sean called and told me that he had joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was not too impressed. My yearly anniversary present was that he was going to stop drinking. So, and you know, the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was my mother used to, when things got really bad with my father, she would say, threaten to send him to the double A's. And the double A's was really the pits. I mean, when you stoop that low, and that's what I really thought, if we stoop that low to join AA, you know? And also, when you become that obsessed with somebody, you know, there was someone who said, an alcoholic, who said, gee, you talk about your husband a lot. And I said, well, don't you talk about your obsession a lot, you know? Sean was my obsession. He was my life. Everything revolved around him. Bonnie was totally lost. When Sean had a good day, we had a good day. When he had a bad day, we had a bad day. When he got a ticket, we got a ticket. So when he joined AA, we joined AA. You see, there was no differentiation. I looked to him as to how I was feeling. And that's how I knew what kind of day I had, by watching his. A little crazy. And so, as I said, I was not too thrilled. And I said, fine, go to AA, you know. And I came back a week later. And he started talking to me. I did notice a difference. I did notice a difference this time. I've never known him with a week of sobriety, with all his trying to stop. And, you know, we did all those things from hard booze to wines to, you know, everything white to clearer, you know. Anyway, he was very different this time, and he had this, he kept talking about God, and he talked about these people in AA, and they had this look in their eyes. And I thought, what has he gotten me into now, you know? And he went on, and then he told me that there was a place for me. Which I wasn't too thrilled to hear about. You know, so he gave me a lady's number to call, and I didn't call her, but she called me first the next day. And as I said, I wasn't too lovable or warm, and my first reaction was, who is this stranger putting into my life? You know, she was telling me about early sobriety, and what my husband may be going through in his first couple, her first month of sobriety. But she said the one magic word that still worked with me. She said, you know, you can't keep your husband sober, but you can help make his sobriety a little easier. And help was still a magic word for me. It really was. So I went to my first meeting, and it was like Angie. I loved it from the very moment I walked in. And the woman I remember to this day who was leading the meeting was talking about a violent alcoholic, physically violent. Now, Sean had never been physically violent. I didn't identify with that. But I identified with the feeling in the room, and I was identifying with the other feelings that people were talking about. And it was the first time somebody understood what my stomach used to feel like all the time. You know, I would talk to my friends about my husband before the program. They all say, well, why don't you just leave him? You know, standard answer. In Al-Anon, nobody will tell you that. Nobody will ask you that question. Because we all know why we're there. I loved it. I just loved it. And I would like to tell you that Sean went to AA, and I went to Al-Anon, and everything was wonderful. But that's not the way it goes. I think Sean's first year of sobriety was as bad for me as his last year of drinking. And I kept thinking, what is this? You know? And thank God for the Al-Anons. Because they started, this woman who picked me up at the meeting, she seemed to know so much about alcoholism. You know, Sean was sleeping every time I turned around in the first few months, you know. He was always taking a nap. It made me crazy. And she would say, oh yeah, a lot of them do that. That's okay. It's normal. And it was just good to hear she knew about alcoholism. And you know, that first meeting, when I heard that the answer was alcoholism, I was relieved and doubtful at the same time. I had that feeling of being absolutely tired, also that Angie talked about. And it wasn't tired, it was surrendered. And I really, Al-Anons have to get to that point, too. I think if you have another trick up your sleeve that you think you can work and you can straighten this guy out, then you better go and try it, because Al-Anon ain't going to work. You got to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I didn't realize till I got to that meeting that I was exhausted, and I was told that I wasn't responsible for his drinking, that there was nothing I could do that would make him drink. And it was like a load off my shoulders. It really was. And I was told to stay out of the way and just let him get sober. I thought he should get sober and turn into Prince Charming is what I wanted, you know. And I found out I was really angry because he didn't fix me. You know, I married my solution. When I took all those problems with me from Cleveland, he was the one that was going to fix them, you know. And he didn't. He didn't fix me at all. You know, I used to go to meetings, and I used to feel guilty. I was supposed to be grateful for sobriety. And sometimes inside of me, I would say, God, I wish you would just take a drink and get the edge off, you know. And I would feel so guilty for feeling that way, you know. And what I realized is that I liked him when he was drinking because I had control. I knew the rules. I knew the ropes. I knew how to manipulate him. I knew how to get what I wanted. But I didn't understand the sobriety thing. He started working a program. Alcoholics shape up real quick. You know, they smell better, they dress better. You know, in no time at all, they look fine. You know, had you looked at us as a couple when I got to the program, you would have pointed the finger at me and said, she is the one with the problem. Because I used to wear babushkas on my head because I never had money to get my hair done. So I used to wear these babushkas. And I had these long dresses. I looked like a little like a gypsy, I guess. And I never had money for clothes, never had money to get my hair done, never anything to take care of me. I used to drive, it looked like a drunk's car. I drove this beaten-up Volkswagen, and he was tootling around in his Mercedes, you know. And he came to his first meeting, which you'll hear later on, in his Italian sports jacket and designer tie. He always looked just fine, you know. And I was the one that was angry and nasty and mean. You know, but he was loaded all the time. He was just always mellow, you know. So I didn't like losing the control. And I didn't know if I liked my husband sober. I had never known him sober, and suddenly he was very different. We would go to a party, a lot of AA parties, and my husband, who was usually the life of the party, walk in, stand in the middle of the room and take over, was now sitting in the corner eating all the food. Made me crazy. And it made me crazy because I had to shift for myself. I couldn't hide behind him anymore. I had to start looking at me. And you know, every couple, when they come to Al-Anon Alcoholics Anonymous, I think have to pull apart. We were so into each other. I had no idea what my responsibilities were and what were his responsibility. Everything was my responsibility. I did not know. I had to talk each thing over. And as much as I hated the control, I loved the control, you know. In the drinking, I remember a couple of, I had two sentences I said every other every second when there was a silence is, do you love me and what are you thinking? And I thought and it wasn't really concern, it was control. If you told me everything, then I had control of the situation, you know, and that's Al-Anon. I didn't know what the problem was, but I was going to fix it, you know. Anyway, I started losing this control in Al-Anon, and he in AA. I asked him to make my phone calls, and he came up to me and said, no, I'm not going to do that for you anymore. I didn't like that at all. He started, every morning I used to get up and put out his clothes and make his breakfast and take care of him like a little kid to get off to school. He had a few months of sobriety, and I woke up one morning, and he was gone. And I was devastated. He got up all by himself, got dressed, made breakfast, and went to work. And the underlying line of that was, if he doesn't need me, then why is he going to stay there? My whole relationship was based on need. It never occurred to me that he would be there because he loved me and wanted to stay there. It was all based on need. And if he didn't need me, and Alcoholics was teaching him how to take care of himself, then he would discard me. And it was very scary. I learned a couple of important things on my first meetings. And one of the things I heard was that some marriages made in sickness do not survive health. And I was told I had to let go of my marriage. Al-Anon didn't save marriages. Al-Anon is not for relationships. Al-Anons are for me. And I was the problem, and I could not understand. They said, let go of your marriage and work on yourself, and the marriage will take care of itself. And that did not make any sense to me. How could that possibly work? And I had to let go of my marriage. And I will tell you, in that beginning time, I had much more fear of losing Sean than of him drinking again. And that shows you how crazy I was. I thought I could handle the drinking, but I would be devastated without him. And it was very scary. It was very hard. And he was never home. He was at meetings every night. And again, thank goodness I had Al-Anon, because I started getting a program of my own and making my own friends who helped me and loved me through all of this. When Sean was about, oh, I guess coming on a year of sobriety, my sponsor, I also recommend getting a sponsor. I couldn't have done it without a sponsor. She said, you know, Sean's almost a year sober, and she said, you know, alcoholism is not the only thing that took away his dignity. She said, you participated in it too by taking over all that responsibility. Because as I told you, I did everything. I paid the bills, I painted the house, I did the plumbing, the washing, the cooking, the cleaning. I did it all. She said, I want you to think of something that you're willing to turn over to him and start giving him back some responsibility. And I said, fine, I'll do that. And as I said, I thought my sponsor would just forget about it, tell you the truth. She was a very busy lady. She had 4 kids at home. She had a full-time job. She had a newly sober alcoholic. I thought, she will just forget about all this. She sponsored a lot of people. Anyway, 2 weeks later, she came up to me and she said, Bonnie, have you thought of something that you're willing to turn over? But she gave me a little hook. She said, when you turn it over, you cannot take it back. You cannot give helpful little hints. You have to let go of it totally. Because my way of doing things is I was asked Sean to do something and he wouldn't do it my way or fast enough, and you take it back. And you end up doing it, and they're very eager to turn it over, I found too. So anyway, I said, so it was hard to come up with something. So I said, yes, I have really thought about it. And I said, there is absolutely nothing that I trust him with. And that was the truth. That was the truth. And she said, no, 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 that's not going to work. Now, I never thought of myself as controlling or managing, you see. She said, no, you've got to think of something. So she said, think about it and call me tomorrow. So I thought about it and thought about it, and I came up with one thing, and I called her and I said, I'm willing to turn over the laundry. And that was the only thing. So I went to Sean and I said, would you take over doing the laundry? And he said, fine, he would do that. And a week went by, and there was no laundry done. And it was piling in the hall, not even in a, you know, a hamper. It was on the hall, and I had to pass it 20 times a day. And I called my sponsor, and it's like, what's the matter with you? I knew he wouldn't do it. Don't you say I'm right all the time, you know? And she said, don't you do that laundry. And 2 weeks went by, and the pile was growing. And I called her every time, it made me crazy. And 3 weeks went by, and I said, he has still not done the laundry. And she said, if I have to give you money for clean sheets and towels, I will do that. But don't you dare touch the laundry. He finally did the laundry. I think it was a month. He did it. It came out awful. It was horrendous. The colors were bleeding on everything else. But you know what? It was a major change in our relationship. Absolutely turned our relationship around. Out of that little incident, it was the first time that I gave my husband the dignity to do something in his own way, in his own time, in his own pace. It was the first time I had been consistent. I made up lots of rules and made lots of threats and never followed through with anything. And I was consistent from the beginning to the end. I also gave him a little more self-respect and a little more dignity. And you know what? He started respecting me. And when we got to this program, there was no respect for either one of us. And I couldn't believe the change that happened just through doing the laundry. And that's how we started rebuilding our relationship. And everything I've done in this program, is a contrary action. Every fiber of my being says no, 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 no. But I've got to walk through it and take the action. And we started growing and we started building, rebuilding our marriage. And again, that doing the laundry was not working on the marriage. It was working on myself. Sean was about a year sober, and he got a job and show going out of town for 3 months. And I thought, God, I've got a year of Al-Anon. I've got this obsession and this release all worked out. I'll be fine. I dropped him off at the airport, and I came home, and I was lost. If I didn't have somebody to plan my day around, my meals around, my life around, I was lost. I couldn't believe it. I called my sponsors. I don't know what to do with myself. She said, well, get into some hobbies. I said, he's my hobby, you know. What do you mean, my hobby? I had no hobbies. He was my life, you know. And I started the journey of finding out who I was and what I liked. I had no likes. My likes were Sean's likes. I liked the books he read because I never read books. Who had time to do things like that. And I started finding out who I was and getting more and more involved in the program and working the steps to the best of my ability. And I started to grow and to change. And, you know, when he left, when he was coming back, rather, 4 months later, I was supposed to pick him up at the airport, and I called my sponsor and said, I don't know if I want him back. And I couldn't believe I was saying that, because that was a miracle that 4 months ago when I was lost without him. Because what had happened in that time, only through going to meetings, doing what I was told, that I found that I was okay without Sean. And I was not only okay, I was happy. And that was a real miracle. And I thought about it, and I wrote about it, and I talked to my sponsor about it. And the decision I came up with was this: yes, I was okay. I did not need him. But I loved him, and I wanted to share my life with him. And another great change occurred in our marriage. And we have been growing and changing ever since. I got a terrific job that just sort of fell into my lap. I never wanted to be a secretary again, let me tell you. I never wanted to type and take shorthand, and that I knew. And God plunked this great job in front of me. And it was in a retail store in this fancy schmancy shop in Beverly Hills. And I met some of the nastiest people I've ever met. And I think I was making, you know, when... In the height of my insanity, I didn't take my anger out at Sean. God forbid you were a checker at a grocery store or a sales clerk. They're the ones who got my wrath. And I thought, God, I'm making my amends here is what I'm doing. I was at that job for 5 years, and I thought, I hope I made my amends. When Sean was about 5 years sober, I came home from a meeting one night, and... Sean told me that he got arrested. And my first thought was, this is not what happens in sobriety. He had never gotten arrested when he was drinking. And, you know, sometimes you don't know you've changed until an incident happens and you handle it in a totally different way, you know. Because what happened was Sean told me what happened, and I was able to look at him and say, I'm sorry, you have to hurt yourself so much. And I don't know where those words came from. That wasn't the Bonnie that walked into Al-Anon 5 years before that. I really felt compassion. You know, and when I came, I remember we talked about compassion and serenity and release in Al-Anon a lot. And those words, and they were just words, seemed so beyond me. And they were conditions that seemed so unattainable for someone who was as mean and angry and fearful as I was. I thought it would just never happen to me, but the miracle happened by just showing up and doing what I was told, because I really felt compassion. My old self would have said, what are you doing now? Why are you blowing up our lives again? I didn't have to say all that, and I didn't even feel it. I was just able to see the pain he was in. And today I'm grateful for a crisis, and I do think you've got to stay there and walk through it. I always wanted a quick fix. And my quick fix got me sitting in Al-Anon rooms on the other side. And I'm very grateful that crisis happened. Today, I wasn't too happy when I was going through it, but I am happy when I get to the other side. I told Sean that I did want to be married to him, and I only had two requirements for our marriage. I can't make ask someone to make a promise that they're going to change, they're going to stop drinking. I can't make any of those demands. But I was told I could ask two things in a marriage. I could ask for loyalty and fidelity. And I said, if you can match those requirements, I will be glad to be your wife. And if not, I understood and I would have to go. And, you know, it's again, I don't know where those words came from. It's like I turned around and said, who said that, you know? Luckily, he decided he would like to meet those requirements. And we retook our vows. And I've been working on a new level. And out of that crisis, though, were some important problems that we both had to work on. And I don't think our marriage would have survived had we had not had that. There were some big, serious problems that I had to work on and he had to work on. And it's like they just came to the surface. And also, you know, you experience the fellowship when you go through something like that. It was like a whole group of people just surrounded us, helped us through it, walked along the way. And slowly, as we got stronger, they just sort of fell away and let us walk on our own. And that's what the program does. I was grateful for that. I really was. We started rebuilding again, and I think you always are. The hardest thing when I got to Al-Anon was when I found out that he was not my problem. You know, it's so easy to blame them. You know, as I said, they look so rotten next to us. And suddenly I wasn't looking so terrific. I had my own set of problems. He started releasing me, too. I remember one day slamming the cupboards in the kitchen and grumbling and carrying away. I turned around, and he went out of the house and took a walk. And there I was, all by myself. I had nobody to blame but me. You know, he released me. I got, again, more involved and growing. And I do recommend the sponsorship. I needed to see I needed to see the program working. I just couldn't take the books home and read them and apply them. I needed to see the people working it out. And we started hanging around with couples, you know, couples who had what we wanted. And I found out it was okay to have an argument. You know, God forbid, I knew the argument was going to be the divorce. You know, you just couldn't have an argument. I knew it was going to be the argument in the end. And I was always walking on eggshells. And I came to another realization that I was terrified of my husband. And that was hard to believe because I had been thought I had been in some control for all the time. I found out he was just as terrified of me later, too. And I had to start being vulnerable and sharing feelings. And I always thought I had shared feelings. And what I used to do is lecture. My sponsor said, every time you talk to your husband, you take out the words you, I think you should, out of your vocabulary. And you just say I and my. And when I started doing that, I had nothing to talk about. Really? There was nothing to say. And we had some hard times in the beginning, you know. We would just stare at each other. I mean, we were totally strangers, you know. And I thought, what am I doing with this man? I don't even know who he is. And they told me, now, and I don't ask how he is. He'll tell you, and then what are you going to do with that information? You know. We had nothing to talk about. So my sponsor said, put on the television, talk about the news, talk about anything. And I thought, what kind of a marriage is this? You know, but it works. It really works. A few years ago, my mother had we always had a terrible relationship. Tell you the truth, she's still a bit of a pain in the ass, but I've changed. And she came with us to the international convention in Montreal and heard Sean's share. She likes him better than she likes me now. My father threatened to shoot him with a gun, you know. And now she likes him better than me. And it's the program. She comes out and she comes to Al-Anon meetings, and she tells Sean's mother that Al-Anon would do a lot for her. She should really get to a meeting. And it's wonderful, the changes that take place. We had never really cared for children. I thought they were a bore and a pain in the ass. I didn't want to be bothered. Also, never say never in this program is something that I have also learned. when we decided that fear of change was no longer a reason not to have children. And God decided that we should have some children, and I got pregnant, and it was truly a gift of this program. And Sean went with me to the Lamaze classes, and he was terrific. And at the classes they had, they're all different couples. Some, you could tell some husbands really wanted to be there, some hated being there, some were embarrassed. But Sean really was really supportive and helpful. And anyway, the nurse, we were doing our breathing exercises, and the nurse came up to me, and she looked at me, and she said, "How are you so lucky to get a guy like him?" And I thought, God, if she'd only known him 8 years before, she'd probably wonder where the hell I picked him up, you know? And our little girl was born, and Sean was there, and he cut her umbilical cord and gave her first bath. And it was a wonderful thing to share. And it's only because of the program I would have cheated myself out of it. And I was terrified of the change. To this day, I hate change. I hate when they move the aisles around in the grocery store. If they move the ketchup to a different aisle, I'm lost. I hate change. And when we were going to have this child, I thought, of course, my first thought is always negative. You know, how is this going to change our life and our freedom, da-da-da-da. And it never occurs to me it's going to be a positive change, and it was. She is just the best decision we've ever made. And she is a real gift to this program. And her name is Kate. She's surrounded by people in the program. And she went everywhere. When she was a baby, she went to conventions. She went to my meetings with me. And the program is people in and out of her house, and the phone is ringing. And it's always, most of the time, it's loving and warm and serene. Not always. But she is a real fringe benefit. And when she was about, right around her second birthday, last December, they had on the news Peter Lawford dying. And they talked about Peter Lawford being in alcoholism hospitals and drug treatment centers, and they went on and on about alcoholism. And she looked at me at 2 years of age, and she said, "Mommy, they're talking about meetings." And I thought, you know, if you think children don't know what's going on, I thought if she's hearing alcoholism, she's hearing all those other things, loving unconditionally, higher power, self-worth. And I thought she has it, you know, her definition of an alcoholic is somebody who goes to meetings. And it's really wonderful. And I thought if she's hearing all those other things, maybe she's going to have a break. You know, I come from a long line of alcoholism. Parents, grandparents, on and so, same on my husband's side. And I thought maybe she's got a chance to break this pattern. I know she's going to have to do what she's going to have to do. I figure she'll either be an alcoholic or marry one. That's okay. But maybe she won't have to go as far and get as crazy. And she's just terrific. She's just a real fringe benefit of this program. And again, I was so scared of being a mother. I didn't know if I had what it took to be a mother because I didn't know. I didn't know how to be a wife. I didn't know how to be a friend. And I learned all those things in Al-Anon. They taught me a new way of loving. I used to think I used to have to grab hold of somebody, not let them go, and I practically choke them to death with my love. And today I can love with an open hand, and it's very scary. It's tough love. It really is. When Kate was born, I worked until the week before my due date, and my sponsor said, "Are you going to have that baby in that store?" You know, still a little insecure about finances, you know. And on my first day home, Sean went to work, and he came back half an hour later. And I said, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, our company went bankrupt." And, you know, it's nice not to get terrified about those kind of changes and just know that something better is going to happen. And it's been difficult for us since Kate's been born financially. And we also got ourselves into a bit of hot water in the program by helping, again, too much. And I used to help people outside, you know, before I got to the program, too much. And I found out you can do the same thing in the program. And we lent some people some money and got ourselves into a very difficult financial situation. And what I was trying to do is really help them. And what I was really doing was crippling them. You know, I hate to see people in pain. I hate to see my husband upset. And I have to know that they have to go through what they have to go through. Anyway, we got ourselves in this big financial mess. We had this big note that was due, and we were forced to put our house on the market to pay off this debt. And I got real angry, and I said, how did I get myself into this? I got into taking their inventory. I've gone through the gamut of emotions, and I finally had to let go of it. It was just a stupid mistake, you know, and it's only money. Anyway, we put our house on the market, and we thought, well, what we really had thought was we will just refinance the house and pay it off. And for some reason, we kept getting rejected by the banks. Now, that had never happened. Even in Sean's drinking, we had never really had that kind of a problem. And so we did put the house up for sale and felt that that's what we had to do. We had to do it, and I had to let go of it. And about 6 months went by, and the house hadn't sold, and the note was getting due. And I kept trying to turn it over and see what God had in mind for us. And I tell you, it got me into meditating and praying a little more. Crisis always does that, you know. Anyway, I got an idea that I know didn't come from me. About maybe 6 months had passed, and Sean had been in another job a little longer, that maybe we should try refinancing again. So we went into this bank, and there was a different bank that we had tried. And there was this woman, and we told her our situation, and she said, oh, I see, there's no problem at all. They didn't ask for papers. You know, other times they had gone to committees and they had to look at your taxes. And then she said, no, none of that's necessary. It'll all be fine. I couldn't believe it. And we got the money and paid off the debt. A week after that, I went in just to say hi to this nice lady. And she was gone. And I told Sean what happened. I said, I guess this God had to dress up in drag and come into the bank and give us his loan. I couldn't believe it. I mean, if that's not the higher power working. I mean, this woman appeared and disappeared just that quickly. And if I can just let go of trying to figure it out on my own, it does work out. And I don't know why we had to go through all that, but we did, and it's okay. And it's okay. I love this program. It has taught me a new way of living, a new way of loving, mainly. Finding out who I am. I found out that I'm not as awful as I thought, and I'm not as good as I thought either. And I have a little more realistic idea. And one of the things that kept me coming here is that they told me I could change me. And I hated who I was. And my feelings have started changing. My insides have started changing. You know, people used to say, Bonnie, you're so bright, you're so talented, da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, if they really knew what I was really like, I had this secret inside of me. And that secret's gone now. The secret is gone. I can just learn to accept myself, and I have the power to change. As I said, Al-Anon told me that it was okay to love an alcoholic. And I think that's the most important thing I would like to share. I was embarrassed about being married to a drunk. I was angry at myself. I was ashamed of it. I didn't know it was a disease, and I found it is okay to love an alcoholic. We could do a lot worse than love alcoholics. And AA has done a terrific job with my husband. He really has, much better than I would have planned. He's turned out to be a pretty terrific guy. And it had nothing to do with me. By my keeping my hands off and my eyes off, AA does a very nice job, thank you very much. And we have a nice marriage today. And we're two independent people. And I'm not going to tell you everything is perfect, and I'm totally well. I still do crazy over the holidays. I found myself hiding candy from him, you know. Do you ever go to some people's house and they always have candy or cake and you can offer them a cup of coffee and a piece of cake? That doesn't happen in our house. He eats the whole thing till it's gone. So I found myself hiding candy and fruitcake, you know. And then he found it. That's what I can't find. So I'm not well. I still can get my eyes on him. When his breathing is making me crazy, I know I'm in trouble. He used to have a deviated septum, and his breathing used to make me bananas, you know. Anyway, he had it fixed. He went to the hospital. But he still, when I have my eyes on him, and I'm not looking at my own program, His breathing can make me crazy. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I think they're just terrific. And I love Al-Anon. Someone told me once that Al-Anons are the most loving people. It's just that our love is misdirected. And I really believe that. And in Al-Anon, they show me a way of directing it in the right channels. You know, before I always wanted to take care and do. And now I know a healthy way to do that. And they taught me a way to be a mother and to be a friend and to be the best daughter that I know how to be. And I didn't know any of it, and I don't take any credit for it. It's just loving and being here and showing up at meetings and doing what I'm told. My will and my thinking always gets me into trouble. But if I just shut up and do what I'm told, it usually works out. I am very grateful to have been here today, and I want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love Al-Anon, and I love all of you very much. Thank you.